in Racine. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Tuesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg.
When the moon is in the seventh house and Jupiter aligns with Mars, then peace will guide the planets and
that music that you're hearing in the background, of course, comes from one of the most iconic Broadway musicals in history, the groundbreaking show Hair from 1968. Well, Hair is still with us, very much still with us, and as a matter of fact, is going to be performed this coming weekend on the campus of Carthage College. And I'm very excited to have with me on the morning show today, making his first visit to the program, the first of many, I hope, a colleague of mine from the music faculty at Carthage, Matt Hoagland, who is the coordinator of Carthage's blockbuster music theater program, and he is presiding over this production of Hair as its stage director, and I suspect is music director also, mm-hmm. So wearing both hats. So anyway, we're going to be talking about the musical Hair and the fascinating story behind how this show was created and the interesting and important themes which it carries, the way in which it is quite a timely show in many respects. And we'll talk some specifics about Carthage's production. And we're also going to be talking about something else which is keeping Matt Hoagland very busy these days, and that is as one of two directors of Carthage's Christmas Festival, which, of course, will be coming up the first weekend in December. And this is a brand-new undertaking for Matt Hoagland, so we'll talk about that as well. We welcome you to the morning show. It's great to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Greg. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Since this is your first visit, I think it's important for people to get to know you, find out a little bit about where you're from, and especially a little bit about your musical background and what led you into the amazing world of musical theater.
Well, I was born in South Carolina and started playing piano when I was the age of 3. My parents put me in an early music program, so thanks to them, shout out to them for keeping me in piano lessons all the way through undergrad.
Wow.
I then lived in Indiana, where my parents are, for a good amount of time, so Midwest boy at heart, for sure. And then I taught public high school in Indianapolis, Indiana, for 6 years, and then decided it was time to go to grad school, so went off to NYU to get my dual master's in vocal performance and vocal pedagogy.
And what did you, before that, when you were teaching in high school, exactly were you teaching?
I was teaching high school choir, so we did concert choir and show choir, if you're familiar with that.
Sure.
Which I loved. It was one of my favorite times in my life, and made me a great teacher and made me who I am today for sure. But mm-hmm. I just knew that I always wanted to work with college age, and always knew that I wanted to try out in New York and say that I had done it. So Went to NYU, went to grad school, and then did the whole performing circuit, and was lucky enough to be a music director for a national tour and worked off Broadway, did several productions and readings, and met some really wonderful friends and colleagues, and of course, you know, was well bathed in musical theater the whole time, and then was then fortunate enough to land here and start to run that music theater program over at Carthage.
So what was the national tour that you were part of?
I was the music director for Spamilton. So Spamilton is a spoof off of Spamalot and Hamilton.
Wow.
So it was a really smart, really brilliant satirical show. And we love a good 75-minute one-act production that's funny and fun to play for me. So I got to be on stage every night as the pianist, and then I would get up from the piano and sing the I'll Be Back, You'll Be Back song by King George every night.
Fantastic.
So it was a good time.
Yeah, for sure. Tell us about some of the other shows you were affiliated with when you were in New York.
Yeah, I did quite a few with my graduate work just at NYU, so I was fortunate to be a part of shows like Edwin Drood and Sister Act. I got to premiere a musical called Life of the Party by Nell Benjamin and Larry O'Keefe, who are of Legally Blonde fame, and so got to premiere a workshop production of that, which was really, really cool. And then I was also a part of a couple off-Broadway shows, including one called Emergency that was actually written by a father-son duo. One of them is actually an emergency doctor, and the son wrote the music, and so it was sort of a 24-hour study of what happens in an ER.
Wow.
So it was very fascinating.
Yeah.
And then, you know, was able to teach and do a lot of other, like, random one-night gigs or maybe a weekend of shows at different venues in the city. So it was really great. Loved all the things I did.
Cool. So what was it about the opportunity at Carthage that was so appealing to you? How did it seem to you to be a great fit? I mean, obviously, Carthage on the receiving end felt like it would be a great fit. Why did you think it was a great fit?
Yeah, I knew my passion really lies in teaching. I love performing, and I think it's great, but I am at the core of my being an educator, and so I really wanted to take that next step. Having worked adjunct in the city, working for NYU, working for other institutions, I just knew that I wanted to run my own program, and Carthage gave me that opportunity. And it also allowed me to be closer to my parents, which is lovely. Uh-huh. As they age and get a little bit older, it's nice to not be so far away from them.
Terrific. And of course, Carthage is located in such a nice place in terms of Milwaukee's right there and Chicago's right there. So a whole lot of wonderful opportunities are relatively close by.
And two amazing different markets for musical theater, for straight theater, for TV film. It's really a great place. I'm not trying to pitch Carthage here, but like it really is a great place for our students to sort of get their feet wet in both markets in a safe place, and also to look at that lake every day. I mean, I still walk out of the office and go, wow, that's right there.
That is right there. Absolutely. So give our listeners a sense of what your responsibilities are when you coordinate something like the music theater program at Carthage. What does that really represent on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah. So a lot of it is curricular-based, so figuring out what classes we're going to offer, how we are teaching them, how we are making sure the curriculum works in tandem with the acting curriculum in the theater department, and so we can make sure that all boats are rising as far as what they're learning. And then the fun part is then putting up their productions, right? So I have the fortunate job to put up not only Hair that we'll talk about today, but also along with the theater department putting up Legally Blonde in the spring. So I have a really fun time doing that. And then, of course, getting the auditions ready. So making sure that we can not only get our current students auditioned for the shows we have coming up, but then also the auditions for the actual music department and for the actual degree track itself.
There you go. And, of course, Carthage, in addition to working with undergrads, also has quite a number of gifted and skilled music theater folks in our graduate program, in our master's program.
Yeah.
Describe to our listeners what that's all about and how exciting an undertaking that's been for Carthage.
Well, I think it's a really great program, and it's really enticing because it is a 10-month master's program where a lot of institutions are offering 2 or 3 year programs. And we're saying, come here, you get your feet wet for 10 months, and then you can go do whatever you need to do. What I love about it is, as a professor myself and who teaches some of the grad students and a couple grad courses, I love that they can be a part of the process. So I had my entire grad class there last night at our first tech dress rehearsal of hair last night. And so they got to see literally how it all comes together. And of course, because I had able bodies in the room, I also utilized them for many things at many times. But for them, it was such a great experience because they got to see how it really all does come together. I think a lot of times we as performers don't see all the behind the scenes stuff, or we haven't been asked to look at it. And so I think for these grad students, that was a really cool experience for them, especially last night.
Great. One thing that maybe would be interesting for you to just say a word about is the fact that our music theater program involves not only really polished, full-fledged productions, sometimes on the Wartburg Auditorium stage. Mm-hmm. In this case, I think Siebert, right?
In the chapel, yeah.
Siebert Chapel is where Hair is being presented. But that there is a smaller space, kind of a workshop space, where other kinds of productions are happening nearly all year long.
Yeah.
And give students kind of a different look at the musical theater experience.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
So we have not only our music theater workshop courses where they offer sort of a showcase at the end of the semester to say, like, this is what we've been working on all semester. But we also have not only our Wartburg, but we also have a studio theater where a lot of our either student-led productions or student-directed productions ends up happening. So there, at any given time, they could be in 2 productions if they wanted at once. I don't recommend that, but they could be. So we have several opportunities for them, which I think that's one of the joys of a liberal arts institution and our size. We can offer you multiple opportunities for you to really get your feet wet.
Right. And my experience when working with the Opera Workshop, which is a much smaller program, and most of what we do is on quite a modest scale, but it seems to me that one of the advantages of that is that it lays sometimes an extra layer of responsibility on the shoulders of the performers to make this real, to make this work, to immerse themselves, where they don't have a spectacular set and spectacular lights and spectacular costumes to do some of that heavy lifting. It more of it is incumbent on them and their own imagination. I mean, there's just something to be said for that. And I think that's changed my perspective on some of these workshop productions that also occur, that I think I've come to understand the value of those kind of experiences for our students.
Well, I think part of our job as not only educators but as performers, we have to make our audience believe in the world in which we're creating. So, you know, if we can do that by the story that we're telling, we don't need a set. We don't need fancy costumes. They're nice. They're lovely. Don't get me wrong. But I think, you know, we just don't need that. And we don't always need it. I think it has its place for sure. I also think that it is a great opportunity for the kids to learn how to put things together, how to build a costume, how to build a set, how to paint a set, how to get together and teamwork. We've taken over the chapel, which is a multi-use space and gets used for many things, like a Lakeside Choral Festival today, and then we'll do Hair in there tonight. So it's just one of those, you know, moments where we go, all right, we have to build this and we have to share. And so it actually teaches them, as I say about this degree multiple times, you're going to learn so many transferable skills that have nothing to do with just musical theater. And, you know, I think back to my undergraduate experience, I learned how to use power tools because of my undergraduate experience, which then, you know, led me to building things later on in my life. But, you know, it wasn't until a shopkeeper literally said, here's how you use a circular saw. And I went, all right. Let me not cut my thumb off today.
Right.
And you figure it out. And so I think a lot of that still rings true for these kids here, and which is also lovely because they do have to participate in that way in these productions, not only in workshop productions, but also in theater productions. They have to do the work on it so that they sort of have that ownership.
Right. Well, and they own not just the spotlight in which they're singing, but
correct.
All that happens outside the spotlight that makes it possible. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking today with a faculty colleague from Carthage's music department, Matt Hoagland, who coordinates the music theater program and right now is immersed in a production of the musical Hair from 1968. And that's what we're going to talk about for the next few minutes. Matt, it occurs to me that Hair is one of those rare shows that is so of its time and yet timeless in some ways and timely all these years later. What is your sense of this show? You told me before we went on the air that this is a show you've loved for a long, long time and have some experience with.
Yeah, I was lucky to music direct a production of this in Provincetown, Massachusetts several years ago with my good friend Kyle, it's his birthday today, so happy birthday, Kyle. I wrote this in the program notes because this was really special to me. I got to meet this this woman named Ricky, and Ricky is a drummer based out of Provincetown, and she's a wonderful human. We come in, we start having rehearsals, and she's like, "Can I share something with the kids?" Because she was someone who was alive during the time of the Vietnam War and was alive during the time that Hair came out and all of the popular songs that we knew. And I said, "Yeah, absolutely. Like, what do you want to share?" And she's like, "Well, before I was Ricky, I was Richard, and I had a draft card and I burned it in protest." And wow. So Ricky showed us then Richard's draft card that she had kept all of these years. And it was, you know, burned on the side, and it was in this notebook with then her former driver's license. And it was in that moment that sort of Hair became really real to me. It wasn't just a show. It wasn't just a story. And it wasn't just about some event that happened before I was born. It now became something really personal to me. And being able to sit next to Ricky every night performing that show, and Ricky just playing those drums and singing at the top of her lungs because she could, it just made it real and made it such a transformative experience for me. And I knew I wanted to do it wherever I went, wherever I started working or whatever I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to do that at that institution, because to me, what Hair represents is not only historical, but it actually represents a group of people coming together and a group of people going after a common cause. And there's just, you know, after COVID, after all the things, and in our current state, I just felt like we needed a come together moment. And so that's why I did it. And then when I approached the campus pastor and asked if I could use the chapel for Hair, she immediately responded, "Yes, absolutely," and wanted to know if we were doing the famous nude scene in it, which we are not, for the record. So it's just, to me, it's just like a great, not only historical show that is still relevant today, and we tell it in a way in which it is, which I'm really, really thankful for the collaborators on this project. I have a grad student, Kevin, who is directing it with me. And then we also have an alumni of the program, Austin Winter, who has choreographed and staged most of it. And so it's been really great to have those voices in the room, to have BIPOC voices in the room, to have queer voices in the room on this project from, you know, 1964-67, whenever it was first induced and created. And so it's just to do it in 2022 in a chapel on the coast of Lake Michigan, is, I couldn't imagine doing it anywhere else.
Did anything in particular draw you to want to do it in Siebert Chapel? That's not where most of the musical theater productions occur. Just the size, so that you can fit more people in? I suspect it had more to do with than that.
Yeah, it wasn't so much about the size. It was the idea of what would Hair look like? What would this topic look like in a church? And how do we as audience members walk into a chapel and immediately think one thing, right? Or we walk into any sort of religious space and think something, right? We usually end up thinking something is sacred, something is like not touchable, something is, there's definitely a higher power or a higher something that we're there for. And so when you look at a bunch of, to use the term, hippies who are just walking into the space and sort of taking it over, that was something that really seemed interesting to me.
Wow. Well, let's listen to a little bit of Hair and then talk a little more about how this show came together and a little more about Carthage's production. I have a few songs available to us, and what do you think would be a fun thing to listen to, or at least sample?
I think we should listen to the title song.
Hair.
Let's do it.
And explain briefly who is singing this and why they're singing it in the show.
Yeah, so the whole show is centered around a tribe. So put yourself in Central Park in the late 60s, and just a tribe of humans have all gotten together and decided we are going to essentially smoke weed and go on a trip together. And then we're also going to riot the Vietnam War all at the same time. And so they get visited. At this point in the show, they get visited by a person called Margaret Mead, and she comes in and asks why they have such long, flowing, beautiful hair. And this is their reply.
And here it is, the song Hair from the musical Hair.
She asks me why I'm just a hairy guy. I'm hairy noon and night, hair that's a fright. I'm hairy high and low. Don't ask me why, don't know. It's not for lack of bread, like the Grateful Dead. Darling, gimme head with hair, long beautiful hair, shining, gleaming, steaming, flaxen, waxen. Gimme down to there, hair, shoulder length or longer. Here, baby, there, mama, everywhere, daddy, daddy.
Yep, you're still listening to WGTD. This is still the morning show. And this is just an excerpt from the musical Hair, which is being produced at Carthage College this coming weekend. Matt Hoagland is the director of the production. Matt, explain to our listeners the interesting way in which this show came together. I mean, it was not like Rodgers and Hammerstein or Leonard and Lowe or Frank Lesser sitting down and writing a show the way more traditional shows come together. Explain the circumstances under which Hair was created.
Yeah, so I look at this, I like to look at it through a musical lens. That's where sort of my background is. And I imagine that these three gentlemen got together and just decided, you know, let's have a jam session. And from this jam session, then all of a sudden, why don't we put, you know, let's get high and let's talk about the Vietnam War and let's put it to music and see what happens. And so to me, it's the way I view it and the way the score is notated as well, which has not been changed since it was originally allowed to be licensed, which is one of the most fabulous things, I think, is it feels like a bunch of pickup musicians just got together at a bar and wrote it. And it feels so organic and so just like, here's a roadmap and kind of see what happens. And that's something I really like about this production is it makes it every night feels a little different. And as a musician, you get to really jam out. You are not sort of you don't have to play what's on the page. As I say, the dots on the page are not relevant. Just play the chords and let's keep going. So I just love it. It feels organic that way and helps, I think, also the feel of the show as you go. There are some very, very specific things as we go through it. But especially once we get where they all do get high and they go on a trip together, that trip is just, it is an actual trip. And it is probably 20 minutes worth of music where you just go from one thing to the other, bouncing around just like you would if you were on a trip. And that music is so fascinating to me because I'm pretty sure they were high when they wrote it. Because you just feel it and you get that sense. And then as a music director, I'm able to translate that to the musicians and say, let's riff on this, let's play on this, let's see what vibe you feel, or let's change the feel here. And that's something that I like about Hair as far as a musician goes. I love that I can have that play with it. It's not just the same dots on the page every night.
Right.
It does have that organic approach. And it does feel like we would all be at a bar screaming these songs at the top of our lungs. Not that I've ever done that, but it would be a good time.
Or not that you teach your singers to scream either.
Correct. But, No. Yeah. We use our supportive voices. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So the show, of course, primarily concerns this group of hippies who are known as and maybe call themselves the Tribe.
They do.
But do we have other people in the cast that are not of the Tribe and against whom the Tribe is sort of bouncing against?
Not really, which is sort of great. So we have a lot of internal characters. So everyone's a part of the Tribe. But what we really do is we follow one character, Claude. We follow his journey of sort of fighting his peers to see, you know, if he will burn his draft card. Will he join his peers in rioting against this war? And then we see him fight against his parental figures. All of these are members of the Tribe who become his parents or play characters
Impersonate
would be great, yeah.
Okay.
And so we get to see him sort of go against that. Manchester, England, he wants to pretend that he's from England, so he doesn't even have to be a part of the war. He doesn't know where he wants to go or what he wants to do. He's sort of in constant inner turmoil about what he's going to do and where he's going to go and what's his place in all of this, which is where I think that famous nude scene comes into play, because it is really where the song is called Where Do I Go? And it's Claude asking, what do I do? How do I do this? And why are we here? And then we do see him go off to war. He does go off to war and he does come back, but he comes back because he has passed. So he comes back as a ghost at the very end. And his friends are rioting almost as a not only as a rallying cry, but as a funeral march to get him to come back. But they've already lost him, which is one of the things where I love Let the Sunshine In, and it's such a beautiful and, like, fun song. But in the context of the show, it's actually the saddest song of the whole show. So, spoiler alert, everyone, if you didn't know. But when he dies and comes back, he gets lost. And so he sings his song, Manchester, England, while the rest of the cast is singing something else, sort of talking about that crossing over and that passing. And then the last sort of rally battle cry is Let the Sunshine In, because they are in such darkness, not only about the Vietnam War, but about losing their friend and losing so many friends along the way.
Wow. So Let the Sunshine In is not sung on a sunny day.
Absolutely
and in
not.
In the midst of sunshine, yeah.
Yeah.
It's sung in the midst of darkness, defiantly.
Yeah, and it's almost, I think about it, and the way we have it staged here is, you know, it is leaving. They leave the chapel and you hear it. Our chapel's really acoustically interesting.
Yeah.
And what happens in the lobby, you can hear in the actual space itself. And so as they're leaving, they're still singing and you hear sort of this like haunting melody of Let the Sunshine In while you see Claude's body just on stage.
Wow.
So it sort of leaves what I hope leaves us all questioning and wondering, like, what was this for? And where are we now? And how have things not changed?
Hmm. So tell us about the students at Carthage who comprised the cast, and for all of them, was this a brand new adventure? I suspect that none of them had probably been in hair before.
Yeah, so brand new. I remember announcing it, that it was going to happen, and they were all kind of like, what? What's this show? And so it was a great...
That's kind of amazing, isn't it?
To think
about music theater people not necessarily knowing what hair is.
I think a couple of them had probably known a couple of the key songs, right? There's a couple in the musical theater canon that we love to use. One of the characters sings Frank Mills, which is a very, like, attainable song, and also gets used quite frequently for young female presenting singers. And so that's one that gets used a lot. Easy to Be Hard is a song, Sheila, who is in love with Claude. Along the way, she gets to sing a song that also gets pulled out a lot. But the rest of the numbers are all actually ensemble numbers. So there's not a lot of solo material out there for it. So that's
right.
Probably why they don't know it.
Well, and it's, you know, especially for the typical musical theater student in 2022, this is ancient history for them. Not so ancient for some of the rest of us.
Oh, right. Well, and what I love, too, is, you know, this is the full integration of not just music and theater, but music, theater, and history. Because the way music is written, you know this, is it's a reflection on the time in which it is written. And it is a direct either representation or anti about what is actually happening. And so I think that was part of what I loved, is I was able to sort of give historical background and context. We had a dramaturgical assignment that they had to do where everyone was assigned one song and they had to sort of give us the history behind it dramaturgically. And there are a couple hefty ones in here that we had to have some really deep and adult conversations about, which I love. I'm so glad that we're having those conversations in these spaces, because it's not just about performing hair and whipping your hair back and forth. You know, it is about what does this actually look like to send people off to war, and to at what cost.
Right. And I should think it should be a powerful experience for college-age students to imagine living in a world where college-age students face the prospect of going off to war. And I mean, that's something that probably a lot of them have never stopped to consider. I mean, probably a lot of them don't even realize that not that long ago, that was the reality when you turned 18.
Yeah.
That there was this possibility hanging over your head that, of course, some might welcome or embrace, and others would really be frightened of, and others really have struggled with it. And I should think this has been a powerful learning experience for all of your cast.
Yeah, I hope so. You know, I can't control how much they learn, but I do hope that they have taken pause to think about it. And I think they will. The more we get engrossed in it, and the more we get to opening this weekend, I think their brains are really starting to get there, which is a beautiful thing to see, and part of why I love teaching.
Let's listen to something else from the show. What would be a song you think it would be fun for our listeners to hear?
Since we talked about it, why don't we do a little bit of Let the Sunshine In?
Oh, okay. And you kind of explained the context of this, and this unfortunately is just the last few minutes of it. We don't have kind of the crossover thing. We'll leave that for people to experience when they see the performance itself.
But exactly.
Here is a bit of this powerful song, Let the Sunshine In. The last music that you hear in the musical Hair is this amazing anthem, Let the Sun Shine In. Matt Hoagland is directing Carthage's production of Hair. So, Matt, we've already talked about why you were drawn to Siebert Chapel as the space in which you wanted Hair to be performed. One of the things that's interesting is that it is a space certainly not conceived for musical theater to be performed.
Not at all.
And so can you at least give us a hint of what kind of challenges that has represented in terms of making this show happen according to your vision in a space designed for other things?
Yeah. This is truly a space that's designed to not be amplified, any sort of sound amplified. It is meant to just be as is, right? And the second you put a bass guitar, a guitar, and a drum kit together, all of a sudden we've got many things to compete with. I'm very thankful that I have just enough knowledge of sound engineering. And we also have a fabulous colleague, Dmitry Shapovalov, who has helped me sort of set all of that up in a great way. And we're able to actually turn the space into quite the rock hall for music, which is actually pretty shocking, I think.
Wow.
We're able to amplify the sound where needed, and when not, we don't have to, which is really sort of lovely to see. You know, sound always has its challenges. I think a lot of people don't realize how difficult that part of just any sort of production is. And I'm very thankful that I have been taught by some wonderful people along the way of how to do that and what that actually entails. And, you know, I'm still learning myself. You know, I'm turning 36 in a couple weeks, and I think the day that I need to leave this world is the day I stop learning. So I just can't wait to keep learning more every day about this chapel and the sound things we get to experience.
Yeah, right. Well, and of course, it's also a space in which there's certainly no curtain. There's no backstage area in the standard sense of the word. So.
And the show itself leans it. I think they leave the stage a total of two times in the entire show, and one of them is for intermission. So, you know, they are in there the whole time. Last night was the conversation about, so where do we hide water bottles? It's going to be such a great, interesting, and organic experience. And it's going to be fun for us to, you know, see the production here and then turn it around into Christmas Festival in a couple of weeks, which is also a fun and interesting challenge in and of itself.
There you go. So before we talk about that, explain to our listeners exactly when performances of Hair are going on, if tickets are required, and what people should do.
Absolutely. So we've got this coming Saturday and Sunday at 3 p.m. Tickets are required. You can go to carthage.edu/tickets to purchase your tickets there. And then we also have productions next week, the 17th, 18th, and 19th, Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 7:30 p.m. We also added this year, which I'm really excited about, we added a school show. So I've got about 300 area high school students who are coming on Wednesday of next week to come see the production at 10 a.m. Who thought you'd need to see Hair at 10 a.m.?
Wow.
Apparently 300 high schoolers did. Wow. So excited to have that and have that outreach. So not only do I get to teach my own kids about Hair, I get to teach a whole nother generation about it. And I can't wait.
Fantastic. So again, performances of Hair at Carthage College this coming weekend and the following weekend. And if you go to carthage.edu/tickets, you can get information on purchasing a ticket to come and experience this show.
Yeah.
So, as Matt also indicated, you are also taking on a new responsibility this year, and that is to help coordinate Carthage's sprawling Christmas festival, which Dr. Peter Dene oversaw for many, many years.
Several years,
and,
yeah.
Certainly had earned the right to step back from that huge responsibility. So Matt Hoagland and Dr. Maggie Burke, the new director of choral activities at Carthage, are tag-teaming to take on the responsibility of coordinating all this. So tell us what it has been like in the early going, at least, or the sort of the early going, to take this on.
Yeah, my undergraduate had a very similar situation. I went to Anderson University in Anderson, Indiana, and they had what they called Candles and Carols. Mm-hmm. So this is a very familiar territory for me. And I was asked to be a reader last year, and so I got to experience it from that side. And when I knew that Peter wanted to sort of step away from it, I asked very politely if I could step in. And I'm very honored to say that I did, and I can, and I will be. I love sort of the reverence for the holiday season that an event like this takes, whether you're religious or not. I love the idea of what this event is and sort of the kickoff to the holiday season, and a great chance for you to not only hear the wonderful choirs that we have, but also our wind orchestra and our Philharmonic orchestra. And it's just a really cool chance to sort of set your holiday season off right. I know a lot of us get really busy really fast, and so I'm glad this is the first weekend of December so that you can then go to all of your other holiday parties afterwards.
There you go. So how are you and Dr. Burke splitting up responsibility for this?
So I guess our technical terms. So Maggie is our artistic director for it. So she's going to take care of the reading. She's going to take care of all of the anything musical is all hers. Anything that's not music related, I'll take care of. So anywhere from designing the lights to which we have a huge system that gets brought in. So I'll get to design those lights this year. Working with several offices across campus to make sure that all of our all the wheels are turning in the right direction, and also to make sure that we've got the front of house all set up so that guests can come and have a really worry-free experience, and just making sure it all gets put together, and then, you know, making sure a couple Christmas trees are thrown up and decorated along the way.
So tickets are on sale right now.
And, they sure are.
But I suspect people should not wait too long if they are interested in purchasing them.
Yeah, we are running low on tickets, which is great. Always a good thing to hear, right? Especially after COVID. You know, we were at half capacity the past couple years. I think no capacity the year before.
Correct.
Yeah. So half capacity last year, and we have already sold well over half capacity for all three nights, which is really great. And we can't wait to have the community come out and sort of get back into it, and especially do this with Dr. Burke. She's got a really keen eye for a beautiful sense of choral literature and for the sense of this evening and for the sense of that program. And we're really fully integrating not only our campus pastor, Pastor Kara Burke, also integrating faculty members into the readings and lighting of the Advent wreath. And our own President John Swallow as a part of that whole sort of merriment of the season.
Mm, very good. So again, the Carthage Christmas Festival is the first weekend in December. And is it also carthage.edu/tickets for purchasing tickets if you want to come and witness it and experience it from the inside? Then, Matt, you have mentioned in passing the fact that coming up in the spring semester, the so-called main stage musical is going to be a little show called Legally Blonde.
Just a little one.
Right. So the title already came up. I think you said you've had some connection with the folks responsible for creating that.
I have. I did a workshop of their show, Life of the Party, which is it was a fun take on a Russian film director who I believe I don't remember quite the storyline. I think they've changed it too since then. They originally wrote it for LaGuardia High School, if you know of LaGuardia, which is what the movie Fame is based off of.
Ah.
So they originally wrote it for LaGuardia High School in New York City, and then they did a revised version for us. And I was lucky enough to work with them. Right at the same time, Nell was writing the lyrics for Mean Girls on Broadway with Tina Fey. And so I'm love that I've gotten to know them very well and have worked with Larry several times and have sung for him on many occasions in the city just randomly. And I love that I can pick up the phone and text them and just say, hey, I miss you all. And like, I'm doing your show. Do you need any rewrites you want to send my way?
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, that's part of those connections that I was able to make in New York City, which I really appreciated and have totally paid dividends along the way because, you know, at the end of the day, we're all humans just wanting to make music and tell stories at the same time, whether it's through through spoken word or through foreign language. Doesn't matter. We're all just here to tell stories. And that's something I really appreciate about Larry and Nell is they are very musical and not only musical, but just very smart in their wordplay and how they deliver text and a story, even in a case of Legally Blonde, something that we could almost view as vapid. But it is such a beautiful and well-crafted story. And also, you walk out of there humming the songs because you can't help it. It looks like it's so much fun, and you just want to jump on stage with them.
Very good.
Yeah.
So what do you make of the current state of the musical theater world and the kind of shows that are being created these days? I mean, just kind of what the whole scene, the whole landscape looks like right now. What is your professional assessment of it all?
Oh, wow. I think it's a little bit twofold. I think Oklahoma, this revival of Oklahoma, taught us a lot. It taught us that we can take something by Rodgers and Hammerstein and we can absolutely turn it on its head and put it in present day. Something that opera does all the time, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Without fail, it's almost expected that you do it. So if you do like a fully staged regular production of Carmen, we're all like, oh okay, yeah. That's interesting. But, you know, I think Oklahoma sort of opened that door. And I think what we're going to see is especially probably in the regional market first, we're going to see a lot more of those traditional book musicals sort of turned on their head in some way, shape, or form, which I love that that's going to happen. I also think the humans who are coming up right now, they are the generation to do that for us. And so I think we're going to get a lot of really cool turned on their head sort of experiences with that. I also know that, you know, Broadway is a business and they've got to put butts in seats in New York City. And so a lot of things that are going to draw attention are going to be not only big and flashy, but they're going to be songs that people already know. So what we would call the jukebox musical, which is a musical with songs that are already purchased or out there in the regular canon of pop music, those are then going to become the mainstays. So shows already like Moulin Rouge or Jagged Little Pill, Me and Juliet, which is currently in previews, those shows are the ones that are going to be taking off because it's got the music we already know and they're just resetting it a different way. There'll still be new music. There'll still be new musicals that will come up, but they're all going to lean more pop rock. They're all going to lean into that sort of 90s to today sort of sensibility of pop music with a certain story. So I'm excited to see where it goes. I'm also excited to see how we as educators teach our children how to sing in those various eras and styles. Because singing Oklahoma versus, you know, singing Katy Perry pop songs is a different experience. But how are they also related? So I always love playing that game of you may be singing Who Do You Love, I Hope, from Annie Get Your Gun. But how is that song also like something that Sam Smith or John Legend is currently singing?
Interesting.
So, yeah.
How often do you get back to your old stomping grounds of New York City?
Well, not as frequently as I wish. But I do have several friends who still live there who have graciously given me couches to come surf on every once in a while. So I can get back there every 6 months or so just to see some people and see some friends in the industry. I still teach privately several people in New York who are currently working, which is great. So helping them keep that larynx in fine performing condition. So I'm able to still have sort of ties into the industry and into shows, which is great. And I can just bring those back to Carthage, which is a great opportunity for the kids to see and learn.
Fantastic. And there is a lot to learn, that's for sure.
Sure is.
Very good. Well, I'm so glad that we had the opportunity to speak about all kinds of different things, including, of course, this production of Hair, which is going to be opening this coming weekend and extending into the following weekend as well. Remind our listeners once again about exactly when and where Hair is going to be presented and what people need to do if they want to get tickets.
Yeah, so this Saturday and Sunday, the 12th and 13th at 3 p.m. You can go to carthage.edu/tickets for that. And then next weekend on Thursday, November 17th, Friday, November 18th, and Saturday, November 19th at 7:30 p.m. in the chapel.
Very good. And at the helm, as director of this production, Matt Hoagland. Matt Hoagland, it was great to have you on the morning show. Should have happened a long time ago, but I'm glad it happened today. Thank you for making time for this conversation. And best wishes to you and everyone involved in Carthage's production of Hair.
Thanks, Greg.
Tomorrow on the morning show, You'll be hearing a rebroadcast of an interesting interview with Dr. Sandra Motes from the history faculty at the University of Wisconsin Parkside. And we're going to be sharing with you the interview that Professor Motes and I had about her book called Celebrating the Republic. And this is a really interesting look at that slice of American history that has always interested Professor Motes the most, and that is that early period involving our first five presidents, Washington, Adams, Jefferson, Madison, and Monroe. And specifically, her book examines the way in which the U.S. president and the U.S. presidency functioned at that time in our history, and what it meant to be the president, and the ways in which ceremony played an important role in the president having impact on the American public. And so it's a really interesting book and an interesting conversation that we will rebroadcast on tomorrow's morning show. Thursday, you'll hear my conversation with best-selling author Jim Perlman, the author of a really interesting book called The Last Folk Hero, which examines the amazing life and career of one of the most extraordinary athletes of the 20th century, Bo Jackson, who, of course, enjoyed great success in both professional baseball and professional football before injuries ended his careers. And then on Friday, for Veterans Day, we'll be talking with the author of a book called Our Year of War, examining the experience of two brothers and their experience both here and deployed